Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. Every week we chat with influencers and change makers to see what makes them tick and learn how we can join their efforts. Today, Thursday, March 10th, 2011, it's National Women and Girls HIV AIDS Awareness Day, and I am delighted to welcome Lavi Ajayi, and hopefully I'm saying her last name correctly, as well as Karen Watkins, who are the co-founders of the very important Reb Pump Project. Welcome to you both, and thank you for making time to talk about this very important project.
Thank you for having us.
I'm so glad we were able to get both of you on today. First of all, Reb Pump Project. I love the name, and I think a lot of women would, like me, would just get behind it because it's such a cool name. But it has a really serious purpose. So let's start at the beginning. What is the project?
The Reb Pump Project raises awareness about HIV/AIDS and women, and we do it by, you know, using red shoes to start the conversation. Because red shoes, you know, red is the power color, and one, that's the color for HIV. And, you know, stilettos are power shoes.
Yeah, they are.
We chose that as a symbol to start conversation. So that's our little clip notes on us.
So did the two of you, I mean, how did you come up with it? Since there are two of you, did one of you start with that thought? Because obviously, you know, you think about the red ribbons, and I thought it was such a great extension to go to the shoe.
A couple of, maybe like a month or so before National Women and Girls AIDS Awareness Day in 2009, Lovey and I were at a tweet up, and we just happened to be talking, and she mentioned that she always had this idea of doing a red shoe ball, where she wanted to kind of encourage women to come out, wear red shoes, and use that event to raise money and to talk about HIV and AIDS in women. And probably a couple weeks after that passed, and I found out that National Women and Girls AIDS Awareness Day was around the corner, and I mentioned to her, you know, like, hey, remember that idea you had about using doing something around with a red shoe around HIV and AIDS? What if we ask our blogger friends, because Lovey and I both blog, like, what if we ask our peers, our online peers, if, like, they would put a badge or a widget with, like, a cute shoe, but, like, really just use it to discuss HIV and AIDS around on this day, like, to kind of bring attention to the issue. And I was like, we could just call it the Reb Pump Project. And then that was it. Lovey created the widget, and we sent out emails and tweets, and then it just kind of grew from there.
It's amazing because you started out in 2009, and I think you said that your initial campaign goal was to get 100 blogs to sign up, and you surpassed that. Last year, you at least doubled that number. How are you doing this year on getting bloggers to sign up?
This year so far, we've gotten 1,200 blogs signed up, which,
wow,
like, really blew our minds, because our goal was to get 500 blogs. We launched the 550 campaign on January 19th because we wanted to get 500 blogs in the 50 days leading up to March 10th to join us, and we actually reached our goal of 500 blogs about 2 weeks into the campaign.
Awesome.
So it's definitely exceeded any expectations we had for it.
That's fantastic, and it's such a great way to, if people are searching about it or find out about, you know, the awareness day, that to dig deeper and actually get, you know, get involved in a grassroots manner that helps with search and so many other things and get the information out. I wanted to turn to, like, you know, get to the serious issue. I mean, I think a lot of people forget that, you know, women, as well as men, but women in a lot of ways are affected by the disease HIV and AIDS in a different way than men. And there are some interesting statistics around that, and I just wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about some of the facts that really drive why this is such an important awareness day.
Well, for starters, one of the statistics that often, like, draws us in and other people is that every 35 minutes a woman in the United States will be infected or diagnosed with HIV and AIDS, or not AIDS, but really with HIV. And it's So if you think about the time that we are on the phone or what you usually do in 35 minutes, like in that time, there, a woman has become affected. And that's really kind of like one of the core statistics that we really kind of use on this day, not just us, but also people around the country who are recognizing the impact of HIV and AIDS on women and girls. sorry, I'm like getting over a cold. But I think that that's a key one. And then some statistics that we also share are like the ones about how the disease impacts like minority women, young women, teens. I mean, I feel like we can go on and on. So we can definitely start rattling off statistics if you know, we can do that. So, Lovie, do you want to start? And then I'll just jump in and we can just tag team with some of the ones that we often share a lot.
Well, there's the one, you know, to bring Oprah, you know, into the conversation. I think a lot of people, for whatever reason, became aware of the prevalence of this issue in the African-American community, for example. And one of the statistics even on your website is that African-American women account for 66% of the women that are diagnosed with all new AIDS diagnoses. I believe that's a U.S. statistic, and goodness knows only what it is in the world. So, I mean, it's certainly, you know, and I remember being an LBJ congressional intern, and I had to go take notes one day, and it was for an HIV/AIDS project. And so I was taking notes, and I learned some of these things. And within the Hispanic community, there are spikes, and there are particular areas where there are issues. You know, I would love to know, you know, how do you deal with the ethnicities that are part of this to help encourage awareness around that the sort of subsections that are really impacted even more so?
We see, you know, HIV, when AIDS first started, it was seen as like a disease that gay men got. But, you know, as the years progressed and awareness kind of focused into that pocket, women came up in terms of our rates of infection. So now the face of AIDS is actually women, and specifically minority women. So, you know, for example, they're saying HIV is actually the leading cause of death for black women ages 25 to 34. So, like, it's killing us more than heart disease and cancer. And out of all those three, it's most preventable, which makes the situation even more critical, because we're like, okay, we can actually do something that's relatively simple to prevent getting the disease, but to see it killing us at such crazy numbers, it's scary. So, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, like, unfortunately, and I don't want to say fortunately, but we've been really blessed so that a lot of the audience and a lot of the people who really kind of come around the Red Pond Project and really supported what we're doing are members of these communities that are disproportionately affected. So, you know, we have Latina women who are supporting us, as well as African-American women and other minority groups, in addition to just kind of like the general population who are saying that, you know what, it's in my community, it's in my backyard, I definitely want to do something and join this movement to help you guys spread HIV and AIDS awareness, not only because it's just, you know, to somebody that I don't know, it's happening in my school, in my church, et cetera. So I think that's been great.
Absolutely. Now, when we talk about raising awareness, a lot of times, you know, I know I have a lot of causes that are near and dear to my heart, and, you know, and I take time for things like this, where I know that there's, you know, there are actual actions that we can take to prevent them, aside from blogging and helping raise awareness. But what are some of the things that, as we blog, some of the information that your goal is to disseminate to women to help empower them in some way?
I like that you actually use the word empower, because that's kind of the basis of Red Pump. Which is why the shoe is, you know, important, is because the shoe serves as a power symbol, and we don't want to approach HIV from this victim standpoint or from a scare tactic standpoint. So we want women to be empowered and taking control of their bodies and feeling empowered to be able to say, hey, we should go get tested together, and knowing that you're worth asking that. So in Blogosphere, and just the message we do when we go to events on the ground, we just ask that women take control of their bodies and use condom use is like the number one, well, apart from abstinence, condom use is the number one way to prevent HIV and AIDS. So, yeah, that's the goal of Red Pump, is to just, if we can be part of having one more woman wear a condom that one time, or having one more person get tested, I think that is when we know we've made a difference.
Mm-hmm. We kind of pride ourselves. We really encourage women, and using the empower word again, to feel empowered to have conversations with our physicians, with our friends, with our families, and really also, more importantly, with our partners. I mean, knowing, once you know the facts, it's up to you then to kind of say, okay, you know what? I am going to be responsible for myself. It can happen to anybody. Like, HIV and AIDS can happen to anybody. And I think that's one of the main messages that should be always, like, reiterated and just stood upon when people are talking about prevention. But then we really want women to feel empowered to say, I'm worth it, and, you know, to really have that conversation with their partners as well.
And what about the fear factor? I know when you get down to the grassroots level and you start talking to folks, that's one of the hardest things I've found is, you know, it's scary to go get tested. It's scary to think about the hibernation time and that kind of thing. What are some of the key messages you find, are helpful in you know, teaching women or getting women? You know, you have on your site, you have a locator so you can go get tested for HIV or STDs. But how have you found successful ways to actually get that message turned into some action?
We haven't had a lot of testing drives yet, but one thing I think makes testing easier is if you actually go with friends. If you don't have to be sitting in the waiting room yourself, because, you know, there's a rapid HIV test now that can take up to just 20 minutes and you'll get your results. And those 20 minutes can be the longest 20 minutes of your life. Mm-hmm. So if you go with a friend, you're having a conversation, and it makes it less anxiety-driven. So
yep.
That's on my part, yeah.
And then I think it's just knowledge is like power. And we just really, I mean, it can be scary, absolutely, when you go there and you're waiting for your test results and you're, you know, everything's like running through your mind and you're wondering, like, well, at this time, like, when did it happen? Did it happen to me, et cetera, but it's like, but just knowing, it's estimated that like 1 in 5 people who are infected with HIV don't even know they are. So it's kind of like, well, are you, we understand it's scary, but are you willing to kind of take that risk now with your health, with your partner's health? Like, just know. It's scary to be in that situation, but it's scarier not knowing. And it's like, it's better to know and catch it. If you are diagnosed, it's better to know and catch it early on, you know, where you can start doing treatment and things like that versus finding out down the line or finding out in a way that you didn't plan on finding out. Like, it's just part of everything else that we do. We take charge of our careers, of our families. I mean, our health should also be up there as well.
Right. And a good amount of women, like a high percentage of women, actually find out that they have HIV late in their illness. So they find out they have HIV within a year. They find out they have full-blown AIDS. So it really comes down to getting tested early and detecting it in terms of how treatment goes.
That's amazing. And talk a little bit about, I mean, I know I don't think either of you are doctors, but I mean, you know, in terms of demystifying some of this, you know, the treatment has gotten, the prognosis for people that are diagnosed early and their treatment options have changed so radically in the last, you know, 10 years or maybe even less than that. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, there's a lot more hope, I guess, around this than maybe people previously or currently think.
Right. I think the advent of medicine has actually made HIV, it's been a good and a bad thing, because some people now look at having HIV like it's the flu, because they see people living with it and living with it well, but they don't see the behind-the-scenes struggles some people have to, like, pop 13 pills a day just for their medication. But on the other hand, because of the advances in medicine, now people are living longer lives with it and living better lives with it. So a lot of drug cocktails have now, instead of 13 pills, maybe down to 4 because they've combined some of the drugs through the research. But in terms of the specifics, I can't speak on it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But I do know. Yeah.
It's gotten better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cocktail and what's happened in other countries. I'm curious how much or, you know, what the response is, if at all, in other countries where, you know, it's not necessarily an awareness day, but what the perception is of, say, the American public in general to, you know, the issue of HIV and AIDS versus other countries. You know, we tend to live in kind of a puritanical society. I know my husband being English, there are a lot of things that, you know, for whatever reason in English-speaking countries we get kind of tight-lipped about, and it's, you know, I was raised, it's not that big of a deal. You just need to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that kind of barrier, you know, as part of this where, you know, it's related to sex, so we don't talk about sex. But we, you know, I mean, it's just part of a normal function of life. Why wouldn't we? You know, do you
exactly.
find that?
There are times where, you know, we'll go out and we'll do health fairs or community events. And sometimes it seems like the younger people are more open and more willing to kind of engage in the topic about sex. But then sometimes we try to hand the information to older adults, and they're like, oh, no, you should give that to the young people. Like, it's very interesting to see, like, even not so much talking about between, like, America and other countries, but even, like, in our own country, there's, like, between generations, there's kind of this, like, intergenerational, like, gap of where people just don't, you know, one generation is like, okay, let's talk about it. Yeah, sex is this, that, and the third, and we'll say what we have to say, and we'll be very open about it. And then, you know, we're talking to our parents and, like, our older aunts, and they're just kind of like, uh-huh, yeah, okay, uh-huh, because they were raised to not, you know, be so open and not have so many conversations in public about sex. But we're like, no, you can talk about it. But I think that's just kind of the way that we grew up. But, yeah, even when you're looking at other countries, though, I think that we often see, like, campaigns from different, like, countries around the world, like in South Africa or even certain countries in Europe, and they're a lot more, you know, a lot more open about it. But I think that's just their society, and it's different. It is different. There are challenges, but we're hoping that, you know, with the more organizations and the more individuals who are willing to just kind of take a stand and be open about it, that we can hopefully change all of that.
And, you know, I think in every country or every, you know, the way societies interact makes a big difference in kind of how messages are put out. And I know in some African countries, there's a lot of discrepancy between facts and what gets out to people.
Mm.
So, you know, there's cases of countries where they're being told that you can cure HIV by having sex with virgins. In South Africa. So they've seen, like, that has made a difference in how women actually over there who are getting raped by people who have HIV because they're thinking they can cure it by having sex with them. So it's, I think, on a larger scale, globally, stigma and information and knowledge needs to be addressed between everybody. Here, Africa, Europe, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm interested, you know, you think about the whole world, and then you think about how big the U.S. is, you know. And I'm curious if you have different reactions from people or different success rates or any areas that you're perhaps targeting to try to get more engagement, you know, in terms of different parts of the country. Just looking at your Tumblr blog, and I saw the picture of the red pump from San Francisco, and I'm here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so, you know, it's obviously something that, you know, hopefully most people here are behind and embracing and doing what they can to help the effort. But, you know, in other parts of the country, it's really different. And I'm wondering what that experience has been like for you.
We've had events around the country. Most of our events have been held by our ambassadors. Red Pump is based in Chicago, but we have ambassadors who represent us and have official Red Pump events in their areas. So they usually try to do events that they think their audiences and their cities would be interested in. So, like, for example, today our Dallas ambassador is doing a clothing swap.
Oh, cool.
She's doing a clothing swap and inviting people to donate clothes, and she's going to be donating unswapped clothes, I believe, to a shelter there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just been in different areas of the country, we do different things. So, like, our Charlotte ambassadors, they do the Red Pump Red Tie Fair. But one thing that we've done, I think, in almost every city where our ambassadors are in, is Say Red Cocktails and Conversations. And it's just a night where we just bring people to do what they usually would be doing, which is going to the bars, talking with their friends, except we infuse the topic of HIV into it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I notice is, you know, and I don't know if, like, it's like all good things are coming out of Chicago these days, but, you know, our president, you know, we've got a White House blog, finally, right?
Uh-huh.
And so in doing a little research for this, I was amazed, actually, at the number of government websites there are. For example, AIDS.gov you can go to, and there's, you know, the bookmark and share, and, you know, of course, womenshealth.gov. So all these new government websites.
Yep.
Yeah. And we have, you know, we have the hope of the national health insurance coming. I'm wondering how much the health insurance debate, the health, you know, all the things that have happened in terms of the news and health insurance, and even the buzz around Chicago in terms of, you know, kind of new ideas and kind of a new epicenter. Not that we didn't think it was to begin with, I think, in the rest of the world, but, you know, I've always been to Chicago and, you know, people always know the food and the shopping and that kind of stuff. But now it's the ideas, you know, and it's like there's this real palpable excitement. I'm wondering, you know, how much that has or hasn't affected how much you've been hearing inquiries or getting feedback from folks.
I mean, I think one of the things, Lovie and I are both strong Chicagoans, diehards, and I think one thing about Chicago is that we have always had a really strong grassroots community, and so finding a group of people to support and to kind of incubate our ideas, it wasn't really too much of a challenge as far as just kind of getting people to support the movement, because that's just kind of the nature of the city and a lot of things that we saw. I mean, even with President Obama, like, his story was kind of crafted through these grassroots efforts and by people on the ground really supporting what he did. But as far as Red Pump, it's actually been the opposite, because we started as a online social media network. So our grassroots community wasn't really on the streets of Chicago. It was, you know, all through the internet. And I think in our case, just kind of taking advantage of the popularity of social media and the growing impact that it's having on our society, that's kind of where we found our core supporters. And, I mean, if you even think about, like, the majority of our people in our database, the greater percentage of them are not in Chicago. They are all across the country. So, I mean, I think there's just a lot of excitement and people really kind of feeling the buzz of knowing that, you know what, I can do something on my own. Like, one person can really make a difference, and just kind of like latching on. And it's like one person, and then you have a movement, you know, whether it's in politics or in healthcare reform or just even HIV prevention.
And Chicago is actually an interesting city because they call us we're not in the West Coast, we're not in the East, so we're smack dab in the middle of everything. So we actually kind of like a crossroads a little bit for the country. And I know in terms of, like, nonprofits, Chicago is, like, one of the top three cities in the country in terms of, like, how many concentration of nonprofits that are here. I don't know. I think we're just social justice minded. But like Karen was saying, we do have a lot of supporters from across the country. And because of the third annual Rock the Red campaign, we actually have some international supporters now.
Awesome.
So that's been exciting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And as many languages as you can bring it into, too, that's always a good thing, too.
Definitely.
I've always loved Chicago. That reminds me, you know, I always think it represents the best of the Midwest and the best of big cities. You know, it's kind of like the people are also, you know, welcoming and lovely, and it's lovely to hear you talk about it in such, you know, caring terms. It's really, really nice. And I think we can all kind of learn something from that. You know, one thing that I notice in it that can kind of happen in San Francisco is, you know, sort of you got the bloggers doing their thing, and that's what kind of, at least here, it feels like it's sort of one educational group. And yet, you know, I take the train home last night from San Francisco after work, and I'm going through Oakland, and folks are talking on the train, and got talking to some people, and they have no idea. I was talking about this show was excited that you guys were both able to join at the same time. And no one knew what was going on. And I started looking around at the walls on the train, and I thought, you know, why don't we have a poster anywhere in here? I mean, they've got some were empty, some were outdated. Why aren't they using this space so people have something to talk about? Because they actually do look at the signs. So you mm-hmm. sit on the train for some time. You know, how can people change things like that, you know? I mean, or have you had feedback where people have done things like that, where they call up, you know, like I'm thinking about calling up Bart today and saying, you know, hey, there's this one awareness day, and you could have had something up that would have made a difference, so let's change it for next year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, we're very, like Karen and I run Red Pump on a very shoestring budget because we're not grant funded or anything. So we try to use the little resources we do have to get the most, like, impact and results. So,
of course.
I mean, it would be awesome to, of course, end up on somebody's, to have, like, a poster. But I think an organization like Greater Than AIDS actually does stuff like that. Greater Than AIDS is run by the Black AIDS Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a campaign going on now that's getting people involved, and they use the greater than symbol to say, I am greater than A. So I believe Greater Than AIDS actually does specific media outreach like that. Don't they, Karen?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do. And I think that it's as far as, like, getting people, like, in different communities to saying, like, hey, you know, calling, like, whether it's CTA or BART and saying, like, you know what, there's a great, you know, stuff, why don't you have, like, posters? The resources are out there. Women's Health, the Office of Women's Health, they create posters and things like that. It's really just a matter of calling them and asking them. And I think as far as, like, seeing it, maybe it's just so much of letting people know where they can find the resources. Because a lot of times, especially, like, large agencies, they do have posters and flyers and information that can be put in different places, but people just don't know how to get it from point A to point B. So I think that's definitely a start, is just kind of taking an assessment of your different resources that you have available to you, and then figuring out the best way to, like, put them up or down, you know, in your community is a best way for people to start.
And a lot of like media outlets would do PSAs.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on certain times you have to, they pick certain topics they want to go for. But why you, we'll say Blogger, actually. We'll talk about what Blogger did for us that was actually amazing on their part. When we launched our campaign, Blogger allowed our campaign to be part of their publishing network, which across their community, people, huge. Actually, I just want to say many thanks to them, because I think it was instrumental in the success and the spreading of this message.
Absolutely.
So
that's awesome.
If more media outlets were actually, you know, do more like that, there probably are more doing that, but I think something like that goes a long way.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the prevalence of fashion sites, you know, and the cleverness
yeah.
of using the red shoe. You've got, you know, you've got everything from Guilt Group, which is VC funded, it's got all this money. And then you've got on the other side of the spectrum, in a sense, you've got groups like She Speaks, Web Girls International, all these things that I'm a member of that I will be emailing today and saying, hey, by the way, if they don't have it on their website. You know, and just if all of us can kind of tap into these female-based networks that for whatever reason seem, you know, either they're really embracing what this day means or they've forgotten it for some reason. So I think, you know, it's kind of us, you know, as you said, you know, part of the grassroots effort is for us to kind of take charge. And, you know, one thing I know, I've worked in the TV industry for more than a decade. You know, if you get into, if you talk to media outlets enough and there are PSAs or even, you know, things online, they can always take pictures of it with their cameras. If you bug them enough, if enough people call, they don't want to be bugged. They're not in the business of customer service. So they will stop what they're doing and actually do something about it so they don't keep getting calls. So I always encourage people, you know, Bart, and, you know, there's so many people in the Bay Area and in every city, really. There's always the has and the have-nots. And you can't tell me that someone here couldn't fund a poster, you know, or the BART folks aren't connected to someone that could fund a poster or find a resource for it. So I think that, you know, there's always that. I love to put in people's minds a little seed of the things that could be and never stop just because you think, oh, you don't have the poster, you don't have that. Because, you know, challenge people to find a way, or if you have time, you know, put a couple minutes aside, you know, if you, just like you do to blog or tweet or if you're not online, you know, when you're just talking to people, you know, just to put that time aside can be so valuable. I know, like, you know, Whole Foods Market and Starbucks and those folks, you know, I look to them and you know, I was asking the Starbucks I passed in San Francisco on the way to the train, you know, what are you doing about this? You guys have a board. We're in San Francisco. It's a Union Square area. Could educate lots of people all over the world. If I gave you a flyer or printed, you know, basically printed out one of your banners that has the website on it, would you put it up? And, you know, just asking things like that where these big companies want to make this local contribution, I think we can make a big difference just with our mouths.
Yep.
That's the one thing about women's causes, you know. Because the one, you know, my mom and I talk about this all the time. My mom's a social worker, so she sees all kinds of things going on. And, you know, the thing I love about, or that's fortunate, I think, in the sense of HIV and AIDS is because, you know, unfortunately it started out kind of as the gay man's disease or disorder or illness, there were funds for people that didn't have children or whatever to donate a lot of money. So there is money going out there to speed up the drug cocktail coming to the U.S. and things like that. But there are a lot of other women's causes like cervical cancer, ovarian cancer, whatever. Women just don't get themselves checked out a lot of the time like they should after a certain point. Like they've had, you know, a kid, they go back for the checkup and then that's it. And a lot of this is just about women's health and minding your health. And I wonder, you know, how much of that is part of the message too.
I think but when it comes to women's health, it's usually that it's not just about women. Like, women's health just doesn't kind of platform on its own. Like, there are so many things that intertwine with women's health that often make prevention messages, whether it's HIV prevention or cancer prevention, like, it often makes them a little more, I don't want to say complicated, because I don't want it to sound like an excuse, but when it's like, well, you know, ladies, we need to tell, you know, our partners X, Y, and Z, and that we will not have sex without a condom, and this is about your health and feeling empowered. A lot of women, even the ones who are, like, top climbers, super performers, sometimes they feel like, well, when it comes to that area of their health, it's kind of like, well, you know, I don't want to make him feel uncomfortable. So many things start coming in when you begin talking about women's health. It's very interesting. It's, you know, it's about economic state. It's about housing. I think we watched there was a documentary called The Other City that was created by Sheila Johnson, who was one of the founders of BET. And there was a storyline in there with a woman who she was HIV positive, and she was discussing how housing is her biggest barrier to making sure that her health is taken care of, because she doesn't have a place to take her pills, to remind herself, to put things, like to just keep up with her doctor's appointments. I mean, sometimes for us, it's just there's so many other things that have to be addressed when it comes to women's health, for even if it's like cervical cancer or ovarian cancer, just like getting checked up, access to pap smears. So I think if we really remember that and keep sight of it, I mean, then we can make sure that we're targeting this multidisciplinary approach versus just like very like one-sided checked out. Because you can be saying to somebody, go get checked out, go get tested, and they have, you know, there are 10 other reasons why that's just not as simple in their head. So I think we have to kind of make sure that we are keeping sight of all of that when we're talking about women's health issues.
And furthermore, women are the caretakers, so which is a good and bad thing, because we usually take care of other people and not ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when we get sick, it affects everyone around us, because then who's taking care of the people we were taking care of before?
That's true.
And it kind of becomes this, like, self-fulfilling prophecy, because we're afraid to go get tested because we're like, I can't afford to get sick. So we hold off on it, get sick, and realize that we can't afford to be sick. So I think it's all part of this. We just need to take some time for ourselves to actually realize that, yeah, we definitely can't afford to get sick, which is why we should get tested annually. But technically, I think the CDC says if you're sexually active, you should be getting tested every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something we have to make time for.
Yeah, and some of it is, you know, so let's say you do have, you know, there is that issue I think is so true of access, and can you, there's folks that are literally on the street, you know, and, you know, Glide Church here is amazing, and is, you know, amazing as they are, they just don't have room for everyone, and so how do you stay organized in that situation? But let's sort of start from, like, the perspective of the woman that does get her annual exam every year. One of the things we know is women are getting infected by their spouses. So one thing that, it shocked, actually, my OBGYN before, when I go in and, you know, they do the annual pap smear and I have to do my little test, they don't check the HIV box, and they don't ask me, and so I always... You know, my longtime OBGYN knows I always want to be checked, because you just never know. I trust my husband, but not when it comes to my health. I want that box ticked because I'm there. The insurance pays for it. I pay for the insurance. So, you know, I think some of it is just not being afraid. It's, you know, he's never going to know really anyway, and if we really discussed it, I don't think he'd care that I ticked the box, right? So some of it is just kind of being that champion like you would be for your daughter, you know, and just get that box ticked, so you make sure if you do have access that you're getting that test. As you said, you know, the CDC saying, you know, twice a year. Well, let's say you have an annual exam, at least get tested then. But then so that's for the folks that have it, but for sort of the have-nots and the kind of the folks in the middle, you know, is there anything that, you know, the rest of us can do, you know, those of us that are blogging about this and talking about this can help to do in terms of volunteering, or organizations around the country that you want to give a shout out to, that around the year we could, you know, potentially, are there drives, are there other things where, you know, we can get out there in a grassroots way, or reach out to organizations that, you know, maybe go into different communities where people don't have access and get people tested?
There are locally, I think there are usually very small organizations that do things like testing. There are very few nonprofits that would turn you down if you ask to volunteer with them, because nonprofits are usually small and on a limited budget, on a limited staff. So different things, like even finding out a nonprofit that does testing in your city, and just calling them up and saying, do you need a volunteer for blah, blah. And also this year is the 30th anniversary of the discovery of HIV. So June is going to be major.
June is National Testing Day. Mm-hmm.
Right, and it's testing day too. So June of this year, especially since it's the 30th year, there are going to be a lot of organizations and a lot of initiatives going on around that time. So you've got to identify a place. Usually, what's a national organization, Karen, that's usually like in different cities with headquarters?
When you're talking about pediatric AIDS, you have Elizabeth Glasser doing pediatric AIDS. Of course, the CDC has offices in various different communities across the country. But as far as like nationally, we could talk about national organizations, but I really just kind of want to like spotlight that so getting involved like with local community-based organizations is really probably the most important thing people can do as far as getting involved in the fight against HIV and AIDS, because these are the organizations who are going out, you know, in the streets and offering people information, condoms, letting them know that testing drives are happening, or not even like testing drives where it's like only one day. They're continuously doing testing, following up with people, donating meals to those who are HIV positive. I mean, just really get involved in your own backyard. There are places, even if you don't think that there are, I encourage you like to search them out and look for different ways you can help. If there's a testing drive going on, maybe just calling an organization and saying, hey, you know, do you have a few flyers I can pass out on my way to work, or that I can put up in our local Starbucks or our local bookstore? Like, I'll help get the word out. Or, you know, sometimes we just like walk the streets with other organizations who were passing out condoms and other information like that. So I think really you can't, of course, obviously, we're not saying like don't get involved in large national organizations, but I really think that the smaller grassroots groups are really kind of the heroes of the work that's being done, because they are going out. You know, it's not a bunch of glam and glitter for them. They're really out there putting in the hours and making sure that individuals who don't have HIV continue to not have HIV, and those who do continue to live well with it or start living well with it.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is, you know, if you go to womenshealth.gov or aids.gov, they both have a zip code search you can do that has all kinds of services listed for your local area, from, you know, family planning, substance abuse, mental health, health centers. They even have housing assistance, and HIV testing, of course, is the top thing. And then for folks that are, you know, media, you know, social media savvy, you can, of course, follow those, you know, at twitter.com/AIDSgov for the latest on the AIDS.gov site and what the government has available. But, you know, I think you're right. I mean, the fact that they've got these local searches available right on the home pages, especially today, you know, if you go to the AIDS.gov site in the upper right-hand corner, you just put your zip code in, and you can find a test site, and you go to the bottom right, and you can find more services. You know, it's a huge testament to how local and grassroots it really has to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So in June, are you guys planning to do anything? What do you have planned? It sounds like you might have some things that are coming up in terms of the anniversary and you know what it means, and getting the word out about that.
We're working on a couple of partnerships, so we'll be announcing once we have something set in stone. But I know for a fact that Greater Than AIDS is having a huge campaign that's coming up. So people can definitely check out greaterthanaids.org. But we, in terms of Rep Pump's work for in June, we'll be announcing that in our newsletter or on our blog. So hopefully people are on our newsletter, so join our database to find out what we're doing. And we'll be tweeting about it once we finalize that stuff in stone.
So that's redpumpproject.org.
Yep. And just redpump.org. You can just type in redpump.org.
And folks can go and they just put their name in, get the emails, or if you're into blogs, you know, grab the RSS feed, get it in your reader. And I'm sorry, Karen, you were going to say something?
I was going to say that with because National Testing Day is in June, there definitely will be a great focus from us, like in Chicago, and across our ambassador network of really hosting testing drives, like in our various communities, because that is it's a national day, and of course we do like to commemorate several national awareness days, but this one is really kind of an action-oriented day, so we will definitely be promoting testing. No matter what the specific event is, we'll definitely have testing components.
Well, I challenge, too, groups like Glam Media that are making tons of money with their blogger network. If they're not already looking to work with you, they need to be partnering with you on this. And, you know, certainly, you know, if nothing's happening in San Francisco or if you've got some leads out here, I'm happy to get involved and do whatever I can to get folks, one, knowledgeable about it and you know, certainly get something going, you know, with organizations out here that are already doing good work, but, are, you know, doing hopefully more that day and helping them fight the good fight on a day where we're pushing awareness. So you let me know if there's anything I can do. But in the meantime, we've got today, which is the HIV Awareness Day, specifically for women, for children. Anything else people can do as we come to a close today? It's getting to be the afternoon. What else can people do to help get the awareness out? Put up a blog post, send out a tweet?
All the time. And we also accept submissions for our website, because we want to hear personal stories around why people are involved and why do people care so much about HIV and AIDS. We've had a couple of stories from people who are positive. So that's another way to get involved with us. For us, we always need support on any level. Just, you know, retweet something that we put out, let people join our Facebook fan page. We just want people to get the message of HIV/AIDS awareness. And for organizations that are out there, we're open to partnerships, and we help, you know, promote some things for that are going on that we're aware of, too. We try.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Lovey, did you have anything to add on that?
That was Lovey.
Oh, I'm sorry. Karen.
So, yes. I mean, just to echo what Lovey's saying, I think using your voice on social media is always a good way to help us spread the word about Red Pump and, more importantly, about HIV and AIDS awareness. But then even if it's not in public, even if it's not in a tweet or in a Facebook status or on a blog post, even if it's just like a conversation that you're having with your friends, but just taking the time out to learn what you can and then just passing it along. That's really, I mean, it's like at the base of everything else that we're asking people to do, as far as like follow us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. If people literally just take a fact or a statistic and pass it along to someone else, we're happy because, you know, this is a great vessel we've been given with Red Pump and this idea, but we, you know, the core of it really is HIV awareness and prevention. So
that's fantastic. I salute you both for doing such great work. I'm serious. Let me know what I can do to help. We should, you know, do another show leading up to June or in June to let people know what's going on, and we can talk about those efforts. You know, one of the things that strikes me, and I want to make sure I ask before the show's over, people are asking me, you know, and it's a sensitive thing, so if you don't feel like you want to answer, you don't have to, but was there anything personally that took place in your life that made you say, this is something that I need to get involved with?
I do have a friend. He's an amazing speaker and a really great guy. His name is David Robertson. And we've been friends since I first started college, so that would be like 2001. And I would say maybe a few years ago, he disclosed to me that he's in the public now, so I'm not like outing him, that he was HIV positive. And I think that was the first time I'd ever sat across from somebody, like face-to-face at a table, and they'd ever said anything, you know, like they'd ever told me, at least that I know of. And just having him say that, and I'm thinking in my mind, like, you, David, how? Like all these questions of, no, it just really kind of cemented the fact that it could happen to anybody, and it does happen to anybody if, you know, different various steps aren't being taken to protect your health. And, you know, even though David's obviously a guy, but just kind of having that in my mind. And then when we, Lovey and I had the conversation, finding out about National Women Girls HIV and AIDS Awareness Day, and then seeing the statistics that were happening around us and our peers, it was just like, okay, no, something, this has to change. And that was, I mean, that was it. I mean, since then, we've been fortunate and blessed to meet other individuals and women who are living with this disease and being amazing about it. But that was kind of really the catalyst for me. It just kind of was like David's story combined with the fact that there is something that we can do, like no matter how big or small. That was my personal reasoning to getting to where we are today.
For me, it started in college. I was doing a project one semester, and I decided to do the project by doing an AIDS awareness show. But I didn't necessarily come from a personal angle. And in the process of it, I met someone who's now a friend of mine. She's from Malawi. And she was letting me, she told me that she has 12 cousins who've been orphaned by HIV and AIDS. And they're now being taken care of by her grandmother. She has since actually created her own foundation called the Juliana Tim Kids Fund, where she builds houses in Malawi for children who've been orphaned by AIDS. So that was the first person I met who had a story for me about HIV. And I was just thinking to myself, like, but it's so preventable. I feel like I should do something about it. So that's kind of how it got embedded in my head. And ever since then, and that was like 04, I think. Yeah, 04.
Yeah, and for me, it was, so I get to share my story too, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
So a really, really good friend of mine from undergrad, his mother, you know, he always was kind of hovering and wondering, you know, if she was okay. And he had a daughter, even we were undergraduates. He had an interesting personal story. Fabulous guy, you know, ended up going to a very prestigious law school afterwards and has had huge success. And just to show you how it hits all walks of life. But he was really down one day, and I said, you know, and we were on the phone, and I said, well, what's going on with you? You know, what's happening? And he said, well, my mom was diagnosed with HIV some time ago, and now we just found out she has full-blown AIDS. And
wow.
this was several years ago, and through his shepherding of his mother's care and hand-holding her, making her go to appointments, and this is, you know, an African-American man, of huge integrity. I cannot say enough about him. He made it happen, and you know, I'm sure his grandmother and the family rallying really helped. But there was that difference of, you know, grandma kind of at first saying, you know, oh, well, should have known better kind of thing. But you know, once it's happened, it's happened. And when I realized it could happen in a family like his, and you know, being so intelligent and having so much promise and not letting it derail his dreams, and being a guy, you know, it just made me think, God, I'm a woman, I need to step up, you know, and so that's my personal story, and I, you know, it's by God's grace that she's still alive today,
mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
It's an amazing thing because this was in the late 90s that she got full-blown AIDS. So she was one of the first that got the cocktail when it got here and all of that. So lots of hope, lots of need to get that testing so that you can be one of those stories of if you aren't able to prevent it for whatever reason, that you are able to live, you know. We don't want to, you know, as I think it was Lovey that said earlier, you know, we don't want to think it's like the flu and it goes away, but it's knowing is empowerment, and empowerment is the ultimate. So I thank you and salute you both for taking the time to be true A-listers today and joining the show.
It's been
thank
a pleasure.
You
thank
us.
You.
I love it, and let's keep in touch and let me know what I can do, you know, in the San Francisco area or anywhere to help you guys with connections with media or anything else. We need to get the awareness out. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's
thank
been great.
You. This is great.
All right. You have a wonderful day.
You too.
You too.
And I want to thank each and every one of you who've turned in to this edition with the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. We hope you enjoyed the program, and if so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio, or subscribe and rate us over on iTunes. We always want to know how we can do better. And I want to hear from you. We're doing a special series of shows next week. Did your panel not make the cut for South by Southwest Interactive? Your second chance to be heard. Shoot me an email, jennifer@alistshow.com, with your pitch. You can copy and paste it or send me a link from the South by Southwest site, and we will try to feature as many people as possible as a radio panel in next week's shows. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free informational webcasts at jenniferneely.com. Also, head over to mediabistro.com/social media marketing bootcamp, where I'm leading a conference that starts at the end of the month. Very excited about that. And again, thank you so much for joining us today.